This might be her. Okay, I'd
what
like
time
to-
What time did you commence the meeting, Arthur?
Well, I'm sorry?
3:31.
Thank you.
We started at 3:31. We've approved the minutes, and we'll have the CEO report. Dr. Conrado, please.
Wait a sec, hold on. Arthur, we didn't approve the minutes.
We just approved the agenda, excuse me.
With a modification.
I'd like to solicit approval of the minutes, please.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. The minutes have been approved. And now, thank you very much. We'll have Dr. Conrado's report.
Thank you. This is just a brief verbal update on what we will be doing with the strategic planning committee at a later hour today. We are recommending Valeron and Ballantyne Health Advisors to join our efforts to complete a strategic planning process. Now that we have almost completed the community health needs assessment and the health improvement plan, the allocation of funding, and this is why we're sharing this information with the Finance and Administration Committee, is that the original allocation for the community health needs assessment was $300,000, of which we have allocated about $191,000 for HARC. So we have plenty of funds that are still available to complete this process. And the contract with Valeron and Ballantyne Health Advisors is estimated at $72,500, if I'm being exact with the amount. So that's the recommendation that we will make to the strategic planning committee.
And this fell below the threshold requiring a bid, competitive bidding?
It was a competitive bidding.
Yes. And do we know who is going to be assigned to the project?
Steve Ballantyne.
Okay, thank you. I happen to know Steve personally. I've known him for at least 30 years. I consider him to be an extraordinarily competent individual and has a very delicate touch in the guidance of the strategic planning meetings. Doing that myself, I can vouch for his competence without any reservation.
Wonderful.
So that's good to know. So do we need to move on that question?
No.
No.
Okay. All right, then let's, is there anything else you'd like to share with us, sir?
That's all for the CEO report.
Okay, Chief Financial Officer.
Actually, here's where we were going to do
excuse me, we're gonna bring in our consultant at this point. Excuse me.
Turn it over to Keith Stribling.
Keith, go right ahead. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here. If you could turn to page, I think it's 43 in your document.
I think it's 33 if you're starting at the very beginning, unless you're going further in. Oh, you're going further in. Sorry about that.
Steve, what page of your document? What's your number on it? Because we have your number.
There it is.
No, it's our document, 43.
43 of your document?
Of our packet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
43 of 76.
All right, so there we are. It's on the screen. Thank you. So this is the retirement plan. Retirement plan at the end of the year was $5.22 million. It's modestly higher than that today. It is a balanced objective with a strategic asset allocation of about 60% stocks, 40% bonds, and cash and other investments. We are modestly overweight equities at 64.5% as of the end of the year. I'm fine with that right now. I may pull that back a little bit at some point. If you'll turn a couple more pages in to page 48.
Before you leave that page, can I just ask a question?
Sure.
On the lower right-hand chart graph, whatever it's called, the dip in 2018, was that because of money withdrawn or because of market? Annual ending market values.
Right. So that was, let me take a look real quick here. I don't think I have the annual cash flows in here, but I do have, what's that time period? You know, I can't answer that question off the top of my head. I don't recall the stock market going down that much.
I don't either, which is why I asked the question.
So that's I think it's probably.
I think there's a combination of withdrawals and some disbursements.
Yeah, that's my guess too. You know, I don't want to.
2019 had the increase in the market.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So good question. I just didn't want to answer it incorrectly. If you'll go to page 48. It would be probably the next page. Yeah, that one. So the performance page. Year 2020, not much went right, but stock market and bond market were cooperative with the help of the Federal Reserve. So the portfolio was up almost 10% net of fees, 10.5% total. Compounding at over 8% over the last 5 years. So the portfolio is doing very well. And you know, without taking excess risk to get there. So happy about that.
How do you, if I may, how do you see things going forward given the volatility that's being triggered by Fed
yes.
fund behaviors?
Yeah, so the Fed, you know, we've got a couple things going on at once, right? So the Fed has extremely aggressive monetary policy, interest rates at zero, bond buying program, quantitative easing on steroids, and just basically the rally was a Fed-produced liquidity-driven rally. You know, the economy bottomed out in the first quarter of or second quarter of probably April of 2020, but you know, it's been a slow grind up, but you know, we have the Fed basically making sure that there's liquidity for public companies to roll paper and to make sure that we don't have bankruptcies in the big companies. We also have Congress writing stimulus checks, just recently, you know, passed a large stimulus package back in the heart of the problems to get us sort of like a bridge loan to get past the pandemic. And then Joe Biden and the Democrats won both the Congress and the presidency. And so the stock market was off to the races again, predicting that there would be further a bigger stimulus check or a bigger stimulus plan than if Republicans had been nominated. And, you know, we have that going on. We also have highly effective vaccines, safe and effective vaccines from Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca. And, you know, Johnson & Johnson's one-shot vaccine was just approved. So we've got an aggressive vaccination program going on, which should help the economy reopen. So we have a lot of money sloshing around and a lot of and a positive trajectory on getting vaccinations done. So, you know, hospitalizations look better because the older population is getting vaccinated. These are all positive things. You know, it has created some, you know, interest rates. The 10-year treasury got down to 50 basis points in July and has recently run up to 1.5%.
Right. That's what my concern was, how that's disrupting the market.
Yeah. So it's only disrupting a small part of the market, really. Some parts of the market are benefiting. So, for example, the financial institutions are benefiting with a steeper yield curve. They can make a little bit more money. And they will also benefit with a reopening of the economy. On the other hand, long duration sort of growth stocks with no earnings and, you know, concept stocks have taken some heat because it's a long time till you get paid back. So, you know, as interest rates go up, it becomes more competitive there. Today, the NASDAQ was up 4%, I think, and, and so a reversal of some of the volatility that you're referring to.
That's volatility.
Yeah, volatility in both directions, exactly. Right. Yes. We normally think of volatility as down, but volatility goes both ways. So, probably some stocks were oversold, but interest rates softened a bit today. So it was an excuse to buy those stocks. But, I think as we get into May and there's a vaccine available for everybody and people are getting vaccinated aggressively, you know, there's some concerns in the market about potential inflation. And of course, the Fed is fully prepared if they need to do something about that. But they certainly would prefer just to let it run a bit, but, you know, risk inflation, because we haven't, you know, inflation has been very transitory for years. So there hasn't been any. And, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is as our bond yield goes up, it becomes more attractive to foreign buyers. So if rates are zero everywhere else, or we still have negative rates over in Europe, as our treasury gets up to 1.5, maybe 1.75%, it starts to look pretty good. So Keith,
would you say then the bottom line is that we're fairly well balanced and can weather either bond changes or stock changes fairly well?
Yeah, I'd say the portfolio is in a good spot. It's it's a little overweight equities compared to the strategic allocation, but, you know, with interest rates so low, that's probably a decent place to be. So, I think the portfolio is in good shape, actually. And I think the returns were very good. And, you know, it's one of the few things that worked in 2020 was investments.
Yeah, that's good news. Okay. Yep.
All right. Real quick, if look at one more page, if we go back three pages, it highlights the bond portfolio. And the only thing I would, if you go back
right, three page. Pages,
that would be page 45. Okay. So here's the bond portfolio. You can see the duration. 2017 was 8.3. It's down to 7 basically now. That is just mostly a maturing of the bond portfolio over time. I've begun to try to extend duration a little bit in here with the backup in yields, but there's just not much money to be made in bonds. So I just wanted to point out that, I am paying attention to that.
I have a question. Do you guys ladder the bond portfolio, or is it just buying them as you think they're appropriate?
The individual bonds that are owned are mostly laddered. And, the challenge now is when you have a bond mature, there's not much interesting to buy. So probably I'm going to move it more toward funds and actually have started to do that because they have a little more flexibility in how they can handle and what they can buy than I do. So I'll probably be moving some of the maturities and some of the cash into some bond funds as opposed to individual bonds. But yes, it's mostly.
Are we allowed to buy in indices like the S&P or any one of those ETFs, or is that forbidden to us?
No, it's not forbidden. In fact, you own them. So you own individual stocks. You own S&P 500 index fund, value and growth ETFs. So yeah, there's small cap, large cap. We use ETFs where we don't use individual stocks.
But you don't do that for any of the bond funds?
I probably use active bond funds, but, just depends also. Sometimes we use, I've got a Vanguard short-term bond fund. It's, you know, the yield's not high, so using Vanguard so that the cost is low. So, you know, trying to be thoughtful about that.
Thank you.
Yep. But also with the with this plan, we have to be conservative on, our investments.
Yes, I'm aware. Right. I'm not doing anything crazy.
Right. No, I know you're not. Just wanted to make that.
Yeah. So. All right. Maybe real quick, we can, if there are no more questions about the retirement plan, we'll take a quick
Wait. Page 47. Mm-hmm. Page 47, can you explain beginning market value, 12 million, ending?
Yeah, this is over a long time period. So you can see withdrawals, 17 million over time.
Okay.
That's how you get there.
It's not clear to me from that page that was over the life of the thing. Okay.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. I you know, when I looked at that too, I was like, yeah, that should have been labeled better. So I apologize for that. All right, real quick, if we're going to go turn to page 59, all the pages in the middle are just the holdings. Here's the fixed income portfolio. It's at the end of the year, it was 83% in bonds and 16% in cash. It's actually about, excuse me, about the same place, but I've been buying a lot of bonds because we've had quite a few maturities. And so trying to not let that get away from me, especially with backup in interest rates, tried to, you know, get a little bit of yield. I will say it is, you know, that's where we stand now. If you'll turn one more page to page 60, you'll see here the duration of the portfolio is 1.37 years. Looking two lines down from there, you see the yield to maturity is 14 basis points. So obviously the Fed has, you know, this is a treasury portfolio and the Fed has crushed interest rates. So there's not much yield there, but I am happy to report that, you know, based on, I think we talked about it a little bit last time, but we've implemented that fee discount that we talked about last time just because of this circumstance right here. So your fees have been reduced by quite a bit on the fixed income portfolio. And then if you'll turn two more pages forward to page 62, here are the investment returns for the 1 year. The portfolio was up 2.78%. That's just a reflection of interest rates going down all year long. And so, you know, the yield, the return to the portfolio going forward, unless we have interest rates collapse again, is not expected to be this high. And then, you know, over 5 years, it's compounding at 2%. But, you know, again, I don't expect that in this environment. You know, our biggest risk right now is reinvestment risk. So as bonds mature, the new yield that's available in the market is just low. And there's not much I can do about that.
So I'm sorry, our healthcare district funds cannot be in equities, but our retirement fund can. Is that
good? That is accurate, yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, it's very strict. It's basically treasuries and agencies. So, you know, but basically it's treasuries.
I apologize. That's where I was coming from earlier when I was saying that we needed to be much more conservative on the district funds and that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Okay. I didn't understand that. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
This portfolio is very conservative.
Right.
Yeah. This is your
CalPERS. So CalPERS can own equity because it's a retirement fund and it's not theoretically government funds. Is that right?
Yeah. So all cities have a city code where they have their reserve fund, and that reserve fund is highly restricted as to what it can and can't do, especially after Bob Citron blew up Orange County 20 years ago or more. So this portfolio is similar in that respect because it's all short term and it's all very conservative. When you get into retirement plans, CalPERS and all other agencies have a different, it's run by a different code, and that code does allow for a more diversified portfolio, more similar to your retirement plan.
Any other comments for Keith, folks?
No.
Keith, can I assume you've completed your report?
Yes, I have.
Thank you very much. You're welcome to stay and you're welcome to move on at your convenience. Thank you, sir.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Nice to see everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay, we can move on now to Chief Administrative Officer. Chris, go right ahead, please.
Okay, so the Chief Administrative Officer report, we've got the landscape project that's going on at the Medical Plaza. It's a little bit behind. However, they're you know, moving along fine. I mean, there's just a little bit of delays and some things that have developed, you know, trying to get out tree stumps that are in very confined areas without creating a bunch of damage to existing structures and that. So taking a little bit longer, but they are in process of having the trenching part of the work is being close to done. All of the irrigation is pretty much in, and the fire alarm underground installation should be happening within the next week or so as well. And then we should start seeing then the new plant life going in. So really looking forward to that instead of seeing all the dirt, which doesn't look very pleasant right now, but it's going to look really good when it's all said and done. So
Before you move on, can I assume that at no time is the fire alarm system inactive, that there's always some form of appropriate protection while they're working?
It's functional. What is not in place is the actual alarm that triggers to, say, the fire department. So that's what's going into place right now so that we have that communication. Now, the fire will trigger, the sprinkler system will trigger. It's just that we need to get this installed so that we have all the proper communication to the fire department.
Thank you.
With regard to leasing activity, it's been pretty stagnant this past month as well. Hoping that we'll see a little more activity as we come out of the pandemic situation, but that's still a few months out, I believe. So we still have three suites that are vacant at this point. Any questions regarding the leasing component?
We anticipate any more space becoming available?
I don't anticipate anything significant other than there's been some communication with regard to one of the suites that DRMC has been leasing that has been unoccupied for the majority. It's a 10-year lease, they're 5 years into it. Has been essentially not occupied for the majority of the time. There's been some interest expressed in one of our other tenants potentially moving into that suite, which is larger. So we're talking with them right now, but what that would mean is the other tenant would have to request a termination of his lease, which there's no early out clause in his lease. And so we'd have to do some working with that situation. And we would bring that back to the committee for any consideration and change with regard to that.
Question, Les, if I may, are you noting any increase, decrease, or no change in physician activity joining the staff of the hospital at this time or over the last quarter or so?
No, they've had some problems hiring psychiatrists. They're missing a colorectal surgeon, but no, we haven't heard of anything. And of course, elective surgery was dampened down and now it's picking up again. So
I was thinking more about people joining the staff, given that we're coming to the end of a training cycle. if anybody's anticipating moving into the community and applying to for privileges.
Yeah, I mean, I think these days very few people move into the community as a solo practice. It just doesn't happen that much anymore. People graduating their residency are moving into group practices that are already well established. The days of a single GP in an office are dying.
Are we seeing any movement at all is the question, even to the groups or at this point, or is it just premature?
No, there's a shortage. You know, there's a shortage in the Valley. So if people are looking for jobs, the medical groups are hiring. So whether or not, I mean, that was the whole idea of having residency programs here in town, is that people are more likely to stay in a town where they trained than to move here from someplace else. And there are, my understanding is that both Eisenhower and Desert residency programs are having a very good retention in the Coachella Valley rate.
Thank you. Okay, Chris, please proceed.
Any other questions regarding the leasing activity? If not, we can move on to the financials.
Okay.
Any questions that anybody has with regard to the financials?
Well, I would just like to comment on my request for showing the prior year on the balance sheets. I think it's enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the owner equity net bottom line, we've actually increased our positive position in the process, and we've lowered our short-term liabilities. Do you understand that better than me in terms of why the short-term liabilities are as low as they are, relatively speaking?
Well, it's a component. Essentially, it's a component of our grant funding. So, if on our current liabilities, we're quite under allocated on our annual grant budget. If we had more grants that had been awarded to date, our current liabilities would be substantially higher.
I see.
So it's a function of that, and then also the prior grants that have been awarded, paying down on those balances as well. So that's essentially the function of the current liabilities. Because you'll see, if we're still looking at page 18,
Look at line 2131. That tells the whole story.
That's what I was going to say. Thank you, Les.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay.
The other thing that I noticed in the financials in several places was, we're getting our tax, our property tax from the county. Is it delayed or it seems like it was a little bit delayed compared to, and I really liked the year before being right next to it. So thank you, Arthur, for making that suggestion. But is that the case, Chris? Is it delayed or is it?
When you say delayed, what do you mean?
Well, for example, here on page 18, I think this is the first place that I noticed it, but I noticed it in several places that on line, let me see what I see.
Page 17, line 1295.
Yes, thank you, Les.
Okay, so one thing you have to understand with the balance sheet is it is a point in time.
Exactly.
So, and I think somewhere the income statement is different in that regard. So point in time with the balance sheet can be many various different things. So with regard to the property tax, remember just in the last two or three months, we determined that we would change how we were recognizing our tax receipts. And so we're going to recognize all of that to the income statement, where in prior years, we would accrue an even amount of the property taxes to our income statement. and then we had a balance that was on the balance sheet. So that this one's a component of essentially a change in accounting. So it only looks doesn't have anything to do with a delay in the tax receipts.
We don't receive property tax every month from the county, do we?
Yeah.
No, we don't.
That's why we're looking at the month of February here, which basically we got a little bit of money.
Right.
But it essentially, you know, the balance this year is going to be almost zero because we're taking most all of it as we're receiving it directly to the income statement versus portion of it residing on the balance sheet.
Right. But when you look at page 14, the first line shows that although we budgeted $3.4 million, we've received so far in this fiscal year $4.1 million. So our property tax is actually ahead of what we anticipated.
Right, and that's not a function of the balance sheet, but with regard to your comment, Les, that is $700,000 ahead of our budget. And if you recall with our budget, we actually did a decrease in our expected revenue from the tax, property taxes, because we weren't quite sure what was going to happen with the real estate market going into this fiscal year. So we're substantially higher than what our budget was. And it's actually, you know, projecting, or it's actually receipts are about 4% higher than even last year's actuals were. So it's a substantial difference from what our budget is.
Any other comments on the financial reports, folks?
Thank you.
Do we have to move the a motion to accept them and report forward?
I believe so. Yes.
Sure.
I make a motion.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So moved, and we'll now move on to the last item on the agenda. It's
before we move off the financial reports. I agree with accepting them, but can we talk a little bit about how the financial reports are talked about in this committee versus at the board meeting? Because I know we're going to talk about it with the rest of the board, but maybe it would be helpful if we, the financial committee, talked about that first, so that we have a agreement or understanding, or if we don't have an agreement, before we bring in the other four people that might be not as interested in the financials as we are.
I don't understand what you just said. Say it in English.
Well, I think that it's important that this committee spend the time in understanding the financial report. So for example, I think page 12 is the most important page, that we as a finance committee ought to go through page 12 pretty much line by line and make sure the three of us understand with the help of the staff what each of those lines mean. And then to the assets and liabilities, understand that. But I don't think we can ask the board who look at the financial report and can see in the consent agenda of the financial report if they have any questions, or they can pull it if they have any questions. But I don't know that a regular part of the board meeting should be talked about discussing line by line items in the financial report, unless there are questions by the other board members.
Well, let me ask you a question, Les. Looking at on page 12, let's assume that every one of us have looked at this. And then let's further assume that Chris has reported on any anomalies that he thinks is significant. Are you suggesting we need more time devoted to it than that? And if so, how would you structure that other than saying line by line?
No, I'm not suggesting we need to spend more time on it. I'm suggesting that the board needs to spend less time on it.
Well, I think the way I have been presenting it is that we have reviewed this by consensus. We've had our report from our chief financial officer and our chief executive officer who have commented on this, where where appropriate, we have raised questions that I think the three of us have defined as significant. I don't know what else you would want to have in terms of a working agenda. I'm open to your recommendation, but I don't understand what else we should be doing. And then at the board meeting, the way I've been presenting it is that we have reviewed it. We've reviewed all issues. Whether something stands out, like the it's not necessarily a big deal, but whether the common area charge check discussion and consideration or a landscaping issue, we've brought that to the attention of our colleagues, and we also have to assume that they would are spending some time reading it, unless I'm mistaken. I don't know what else we should do.
And if I may, I mean I think that's the purpose of the minutes, the draft minutes that we have in the packet, because those are detailed enough that they tell a story, they communicate with what we've discussed here in the finance committee. Not sure that they need to be verbalized again during the board meeting, that if directors are, you know, actually reading the packet, reading the minutes, and, you know, viewing the financials and the consent agenda, that that's sufficient for them then to make a decision if they need to ask any questions or.
I would say that during the financial report, any action items should be brought to the board that.
What is it? Action items, yeah.
Yeah, any action items that the board needs to vote on should be brought there. And any unusual anomalies that we don't want to take for granted that they read and understood the minutes.
Haven't we been doing that?
Well, I think sometimes we've gone into a lot of detail about what's going on with the income and the expenses and professional expense. You know, in other words, the kind of stuff that we should be talking about here in detail, which we are, but I'm cognizant of the fact that our board meetings have gotten long, and sometimes we don't have time to talk about the things that we really ought to be talking about as a group of the whole. And I know this is something that we're going to talk about with the board offsite, with the board and staff, whatever. But I think since we're talking about the financial report at this point, it would be good to talk about it here first so that we all understand or can raise concerns here before it's presented to the whole group.
All right, and if you're suggesting that I accelerate my presentation at the board, I'd be more than happy to do that. That's fine. I understand what you're trying to say. You're trying to streamline the discussion, and that's fine.
Well, and I also think that there are some things that we put in the consent agenda that I don't like there, and there are some things that we don't put in the consent agenda that ought to be there. The financial report, talking about the financial report should definitely be in the consent agenda unless another board member wants to pull it. The minutes, talking about the minutes. And by the way, it's not just the finance committee. In a way, the program committee does it too, sort of goes through every item on the minutes and every item on the that happened at the meeting. And I think that's a waste of, not a waste. That's not the best use of the board time. On the other hand, we need to spend enough time on the action items to make sure everybody understands stuff. Again, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. It's just a feeling that I wanted to share.
There's no possible out of turn. And just remember, I'm from Brooklyn, so you cannot insult me. It's not possible.
Okay, so I'll add my little 2 cents here now, since I'm glad you did remind us about this comment that you made during the board meeting, Les, because I think when we call on each other to report on the items that we have to have some understanding, like you said, and agreement on what we want to report. And I agree when you pointed it out to me or to the board at this last meeting. We had all the financials at the front end, and then the report is done at the end or later on in the meeting. So it does seem like if it's not a good use of time by doing it that way. So if we can agree that in the reports, if we can make sure that we also let Yvette know that that if unless there is an anomaly or something that that was that maybe needs to be discussed at a later date because there's something that's a misunderstanding or something or that needs more clarification. Unless it's that, I don't think we need to spend more time on something that can be gained by just reading the minutes. I agree.
Another example, we just had the presentation from the outside broker, for lack of a better word, whatever the word is. That doesn't need to be brought to the board. Now, there was a board member who often said, I want to talk about it at the board, but we should only do that if the board agrees that it wants to spend a chunk of time talking about that. Otherwise,
that should be left to the discretion of the president. And she should, you know, let him feel free to make your call, and we'll follow your lead. That's fine. But I will pick up on what you're saying, Les, and do everything I can to streamline my presentation and move the agenda as quickly as possible.
Okay, but it's not. I'm not picking on you, Arthur. I think it's sort of the way we kind of
organized. No, I understand that, but
it's not new. It was when I was president too. So it's not.
Yeah. No, I understand. I'm not taking this personally. I'm just saying I agree that we ought to be as efficient as we can with our time, and we can easily accelerate the presentation on the premise that our colleagues are reading the minutes.
And so what I will try to do the prompting at when I get to that point of the agenda is to ask the chair of that particular committee to report on the action items. Is there any action items that you want to bring to attention? If not, if they're all informational, I could just start it off by saying, is there anything that is not, that can, that you feel that needs to be covered aside from the reports that board members have read? Is there any, and then ask the board members if they have any questions. Exactly. I think that's the key thing, is that board members that have done their homework, if they have any questions of the committee chair.
Agree.
I will do that. Thank you for bringing that up, Les.
Point well taken. Chris?
Agreed. Okay, so moving on to next agenda item, the Las Palmas Medical Plaza common area maintenance analysis. So you see here that if we look at the schedule, this defines all of the cost activities that are part of the common area maintenance that is passed on to the tenants at the Medical Plaza.
What page are you on? I'm sorry, Chris.
This is page 67, 66 and 67.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. So through the monthly billings that we bill the tenants, a portion of that is, right now the dollar amount is 62 cents a square foot, which allocates a portion of these costs to the tenants. So it's considered common area maintenance, plus since it's a triple net lease, they also pay insurance and property tax on the facility. So. So we allocate a percentage throughout the year, and then the lease agreement allows for us to then pass along any increase or reduction if the expenses are less at the end of the year. What we've done with the analysis this year, there's an excess expense of $50,000. That would traditionally be passed on to the tenants. What staff is proposing this year, since 2020 was a very challenging year for, you know, many of the providers, that we're recommending that we forego passing that extra expense on to the tenants, but then also informing the tenants that we will be increasing the allocation in 2021 increasing it from 62 cents a square foot to 69 cents a square foot. So they're being asked then to absorb the increase over the entire year versus being assessed a larger sum at the end of the year. And, you know, in our communication with them will be that, you know, we've got cost increases, you know, our security has gone up fairly significantly, our waste costs, our property maintenance, that we have $122,000 on a year, who is our property maintenance company, which they do actually a lot of work that's outside of the scope of their contract. But they do a great job on the at the facility. I think they're well regarded by the tenants and that. So I think, you know, I think that we can pass on that communication to the tenants for the new year. But I think that they would certainly be appreciative if we were to forego assessing them the additional for 2020.
Chris, I have a question. Would you say that there's a wide variation amongst our tenants and how they've done economically in the last year? In other words, I'm sure there are some tenants that are struggling, and I certainly would want to help those tenants. But are there also tenants that are like raking it in, that why are we doing this for them, or would we just have to do it for everybody?
I think it's fair to do it for all. But you're absolutely right. I think at least my perspective would be that some are doing okay where others have really struggled. I think it depends on the type of service that they provide. You know, I think some had some hiccups, especially until there was, you know, a conversion to a telehealth type of model. You know, so I think some are probably doing better than others, but you know, we have had some that, you know, have requested the deferred the deferred payment. And so they have a little higher rent that they're paying now because of the deferment. So I mean, I don't think it's across the board that everyone has suffered, but I'm not sure that we should select some and not others.
I guess my point is I know of some providers that especially with the CARES money from the federal government have done very, very well this last year. But I understand that we can't segregate them out, but we certainly need to keep that in mind.
Sure. And I think this would be, you know, the one-time deal for 2020. You know, it's kind of a goodwill thing for the tenants. They're also going to have, you know, a great view with landscaping that's coming up. They'll have a great facility that they're coming to every day. And anyway, so that would be staff's recommendation.
It's not an action item. So do we need to vote on it, or?
No, I guess it's more informational if you have, you know, opposition to it, but the post communication, that's what staff would like to do.
I don't see any questions or any. Is there any public comment necessary for this?
I just agree with Les that I wish that we could just do it for the ones that are actually hurting and have more like an equity model, but if we can't do that, then.
Well, I think that would require, you know, really getting into the business's personal.
Yeah,
$50,000 worth talking about.
That's our role.
I think you're wading into a swamp.
Yeah. Is that the amount that you're saying that's the difference, Chris? 50,000?
Yeah.
Yes, and it would be allocated, you know, prorated based on their square footage and that's how it would be allocated. But, you know, for this year, if we could do that, and then, like I say, we're proposing then to increase the allocation monthly going forward.
Okay.
I don't think these costs are going to be going down.
Thank you.
Okay. Can we move the agenda on to the next issue? Do, to the next issue? You want to discuss Alejandro's your recommendations about Mr. Espinoza?
Yes, thank you. This is a recommendation to promote Alejandro to chief of community engagement. This is in response to the COVID-19, he has undertaken a different role. It's a very active role in the community that has expanded his horizons in terms of the level of work that we're doing in the community. And he has demonstrated to be very tactful and very diplomatic and having a very profound understanding of who is who in the Valley and how they can contribute at different times to different activities that the district is trying to undertake, is helping us leverage a lot of resources in our community and also as a retention strategy. I think it's important to be able to offer these types of professional growth opportunities. There will be some tasks that he is currently managing that we're passing on to another staff member, and that is related to the CBHIP work that Alejandro is doing. And we're moving that, we're reorganizing that task to be undertaken by Vanessa Smith, who was in charge of the Ready, Set, Swim, a program that we no longer have. The financial implication for this is really very small. It's we're recommending a salary increase of 7% to $121,000. That's in the lower range of what this position would have as a salary recommendation.
I move we accept the recommendation.
Before I accept your suggestion, I'd like to raise some questions for consideration, Conrado, if that's acceptable. Number one is the title. Is the title fixed in concrete? And the only reason I raise that as a concern is the ease of introducing yourself to someone else. To say I'm chief of something is different than saying, and I'm going to use something I'm not recommending, but just to point to conscious, I am director of, instead of chief of, or some other nomenclature. Is that anybody else's concern? Because if it isn't, I'll just move on to my next question. Nobody seems to care. Okay.
Well, I have a cultural question. Is the word chief being cultural appropriation from Native Americans?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's cute. That's cute, but timely, with all due respect, Dr. Zendel. No, but seriously, if I was just trying to project myself into that circumstance of shaking hands with someone saying, oh, I'm chief of something, chief of community engagement, as opposed to executive director of community engagement.
It's director of community engagement.
Director of community engagement, or senior director. It just seems to be a little bit. It just struck me. So, I would wonder if that's worthy of some thought. Now, I have some other questions.
If I may,
Alejandro has a master's degree in what discipline?
Public health.
And from what school? It's not important. That's not the important thing.
Cal State Fullerton.
What?
Cal State Fullerton.
Thank you. One of the things that I thought was missing in the analysis or in the array of benefits, let me call it this way, array of benefits, was a requirement for continuing education and our willingness to support that financially, mandating it and supporting it. And I'm thinking of it more in the context of the professional societies that those of us with master's degrees in the various panorama of healthcare administration have. I'm a member of the American College of Healthcare Executives, as an example. I'm a fellow. I'm sure there are public health things, and shouldn't we require ongoing continuing education, and shouldn't we support that?
That is part of our existing policy, Arthur, and we do support staff professional growth in that regard. And yes, we do have a plan in which we support staff learning, and we pay for it.
Okay, do we need to put that in the job description?
I don't think so. It's part of the workplace policy.
I see. Okay, and
yeah, it's in our employee handbook.
Okay, are there dollar limits assigned to various categories, or is it just as proposed by the individual?
No, the salaries. Every position has a salary range.
No, not the range. I'm not talking about the salary. I'm talking about the support for continuing education.
Oh, that's across the board.
It's across the board. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much for the clarifications.
I think Chris had something to share.
When we're talking about the title, oftentimes if there's the word chief involved with it, it typically ends with officer. So chief community engagement officer, even though it's long, it may flow better. I don't know. Just a suggestion.
Yeah, well, we had extensive discussions with our human resources consultant, and this is the title that we settle with.
Okay, as long as it was considered and moved forward. Is the salary increase appropriate? Is it should it be maybe 10% instead of 7%? Or is there a reason it ended up at 7%?
No particular reason. I think we tried to be conservative, but
I would recommend. I would like to see it move. When you make a change of this significance to the job description, I think that the salary increase should be somewhat commensurate. And I would like to suggest maybe raising the salary increase to 10%.
Thank you.
Because it's an extraordinary. It's an extraordinary percentage, never to be repeated. More than likely.
I personally defer to the CEO and the HR director. I'm not sure directors need to get involved in salaries unless they're outlandish.
I agree.
I think it's short, that's all. But okay, I just raising my voice, and whatever consideration you consider appropriate, I will support. Are there any other questions? Any other issues? Well, I'd like to move the question.
I already moved it.
So we have a second?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is carried. Chris, who's going to discuss the consultant? Okay.
So the professional services authorization for the architect, Press, Lutzik, and Greenwood. This is in relation to a build out of a conference room at the RAP offices that the district leases. I emailed you earlier the floor plan, as well as a rendering of what that conference room would look like, would be utilized for purposes of committee meetings, other meetings that the district staff or personnel would be engaging in. It would help eliminate where we're having to rent other spaces for committee meetings. We've had to do that in the past. And so the recommendation, initially it's a two-step process. So we have the architect that would be working on, obviously we're a little ahead of that with the drawings and the renderings that we provided, and looking to approve the services authorization not to exceed $6,000. And then after the drawings and the estimated costs are provided, we'll bring the cost of the construction back to the committee for consideration.
How long is our lease?
It's an annual lease that's renewable each May.
So are you concerned that RAP's gonna kick us out after we upgrade their property?
Well, and one of the things according to our lease is that we need to seek written approval from RAP to be able to do this work. So I have reached out to IRA.
That wasn't my point.
to see what we need to do to obtain that authorization. And there's also the potential that we would need to remove the TI work that we put in at the end of the lease if that's requested by RAF.
Are we being recorded?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I won't say anything then.
do we have a motion to move this agenda?
I'll move it forward.
I'm going to abstain from this this item.
But. I'll second the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I think we can carry the motion. Is there any new business not on the agenda that we need to entertain at this time? If not, I would like to submit that we call the meeting closed at 4:33, March 9th.
We do have the foundation to do.
Now, I'd like to open the next meeting for the foundation at this same time. Unless people need a break, we may be able to move this expeditiously. I'm going to call the meeting to order at 4:33 as well.
Do we have? We approve the agenda.
Approve the agenda. We have a second.
Second.
Now, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do we have any public comment at this time? Andrea?
No public comments.
Okay, I'm going to dispense with reading the admonition about public comments then.
I move we approve the minutes.
Second.
Do we have a second for that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye, so move. Dr. Conrad Barzaga, the CEO report, please. If
nothing to report at this time, thank you.
Thank you. Chris, financial report. Do we have any discussion of the financial report?
It's essentially as what we've seen, the last, two or three months. We're showing a almost break even on our net income. We do have several components that are going on in here with regard to the CARES funds, the PHI funds, and things that we're doing internally through the foundation with regard to the COVID component. So any questions that you might have, happy to entertain.
I have a question on the general grants. Is there a reason why there were different amounts for two organizations, Visión y Compromiso and Pueblo Unido, than the other organizations through the grants?
Are you looking at the grant schedule?
Yeah, it was page, I think I wrote down number 6, so it's page 12 to 13.
It's in the check register.
Is that? Okay, check register.
No, wait a minute. So say that again so that we make sure that
answer. Okay. What is the reason for the two organizations, Pueblo Unido and Visión, for having different amounts than the other organizations for the CARES grant?
That's for the, I think you're talking about the Public Health Institute monies.
Mm-hmm.
And those were actually, those allocations were actually defined by PHI.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the explanation. The other thing is, the other thing that I noted was the Avery funds that we paid $63,380. Do we anticipate spending more for studies, or is that the anticipated amount for that work to be done? What page is that? 12, 13.
That's a three-year grant. That's a three-year grant with Public Health Institute that's doing the work for the air quality.
Okay,
so it's coming out of Avery funds because it's related to asthma and air quality.
Okay, so
and that's also the work that Concur is working on as well is coming out of that bucket.
So we're still in the study phase rather than the spending the money to do something phase.
Okay, so if there's more money to be spent, it'll be coming to us for action.
Based on the recommendations of the study, yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I was following how that work was coming along.
Do we have any other issues relative to the financials?
I move we accept the financial report.
Second.
So moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. Other other matters, new business for this committee at this time? I see none at this point and would recommend adjournment. All in favor say aye. And
aye.
Goodbye.
Andrea, does strategic planning start at 4:30 or 5?
4:30.
It starts at 4:30, and we were thinking that maybe next time when Keith gives a presentation or we have so many items, although we didn't know that there would be a large discussion, then maybe we can move it to 5 p.m. next time. So people are waiting to join.
We need to sign out of this and sign into the new
one. Yes, that is correct. I'll see you in a moment.
Thank you all. Have a good evening. Stay safe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.